Because we're talking about a government entity, not a little minor country someplace, but France, a major country, talking about 5% in an official document, 5% of UFO sightings extraterrestrial, probably.
Well, yeah, I think that's pretty significant. The way they describe it in their own words, they say this 5% of sightings, it says, cannot be easily attributed to earthly sources such as secret military exercises. This 5% seem, quotes, to be completely unknown flying machines with exceptional performances that are guided by a natural or artificial intelligence. They're very eloquent.
Yes.
The other thing, I think, you know, you ask about things that are shocking and important. The other story I did was about pilot encounters with UFOs. And I don't know how many people realize that there is a group that has been set up by a NASA Ames research scientist, which has researched thousands of cases of pilot incidents with UFOs. And they actually are a number of cases in which one would have to raise the question about aviation safety. And whether the fact that these pilots are not educated and are afraid to report sightings, whether that represents an aviation safety hazard to people flying in airplanes.
I've always, and I have no hard evidence, maybe you do, I've always thought that pilots really are reluctant to report any of these things.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And that seems to be the case. Dr. Richard Haynes, who was formerly NASA's chief of the Space Human Factors Office, and he's a very experienced scientist who was with NASA for years and years, he has collected over three decades thousands of pilot sightings. But he has, you know, he's written this report, which is available on the Internet, but he's also made the statement that most of the pilots will not report their sightings for exactly the reasons that you said. They're afraid of ridicule, they're afraid of repercussions, of people laughing at them, that they might lose their jobs. And that has actually happened to some of them. And so it's a serious problem. And so this group, this called the National Aviation Reporting Center of Anomalous Phenomena, is trying to get the aviation community to make it acceptable for pilots to report these incidents. Because pilots have had their instruments disabled on board. They've had near misses with UFOs. And, you know, this could present, at some point, it could be a serious safety problem if people keep pretending that it's not happening.
Mm-hmm. Now, we mentioned Podesta Mateen. The law firm that's involved in this is Lobel, Novins, and Lamont?
Yes, that's correct.
Are they well connected?
Well, as far as I know, they are certainly experienced in dealing with Freedom of Information Act requests.
Good.
And they were invited to come on board by Podesta Mateen, who
should know. They should know who could get something done and who shouldn't, right?
Exactly. They knew. For instance, they drafted, with information that I provided, they drafted our initial letter, which is, by the way, on the website, which is freedomofinfo.org.
Yeah, we have a link to that on our website, and we also have taken some samples and put over on our website, attributed to that website, because it's very interesting.
And that people can read the letter on that website, and which was a very long letter, Freedom of Information Act request around the Kecksburg incident. And that law firm, which you just mentioned, actually drafted the letter, so they know how to put it in the right kind of language. They know, you know, the law, so they know how to reflect on different sections of law when they make their request. And they're going to be guiding us and advising us along the way, every step of the way. And if we need to go to court, they'll take it to court.
This is the UFO Files. I'm Jerry Pippin on the line from San Francisco Bay Area. We have Leslie Kane. And Leslie, I'm going to ask you the big question. What happened in Kecksburg?
Well, what happened, and I can give you a little more detail.
I mean, who landed? I mean, what was the deal?
Something landed there. There was a fireball that was seen over numerous states, including Canada, probably about four states in the United States. And, you know, that's well documented, and nobody would ever deny that that happened, that this fireball was there. It came down, apparently, in this little town of Kecksburg, about 4:45 p.m. on December 9th, 1965. And a number of people saw it come down. They saw smoke coming out of the woods. There were some witnesses that actually went onto the site and to have described the object that actually saw it. But this was before it was cordoned off and the military
swept in. What kind of object did they see?
Well, what these people described, and again, these were individual reports by people that did not know each other,
mm-hmm.
and what's extraordinary is that they all corroborated,
mm-hmm.
in terms of right down to the exact location in the woods of where the object was. They took investigators there. But what they described was an acorn-shaped, kind of bronze-colored, bronzish-goldish object about 12 feet high, not too big, about the size of a Volkswagen bus. And they couldn't see any seams, any windows, no signs of any life or anything like that. It was lying on its side, so it's possible that if there was a door or something, it was on the other side, you know, that was against the ground. And it had this kind of rim along the bottom, which had what people described as hieroglyphics on it, very strange letters and symbols, which they, you know, none of the people who saw it could correlate with any symbols
right.
that they were familiar with. So it's kind of a strange object. It's not your typical disc-shaped object.
Uh-huh.
But a number of other witnesses observed something under a tarp being driven away on a flatbed truck by the military, which certainly looked like it had the same shape. So many, many civilians were involved, too. There were traffic jams. There was radio reporters on the scene who interviewed witnesses, and all those. There's lots of tapes that are still available to listen to of people on the scene talking to civilians. There were reporters that, and there were many newspaper articles that came out within a few days after it happened. So we have good records of what happened, and then the government coming out and saying that nothing came down. What they say was that there was a meteor in the sky, and that's what the fireball was, but nothing fell. And it just doesn't seem to be the case.
It always seems to be the same story or a variation thereof.
That's right, and there are so many witnesses to this, and they, as I said, there's a researcher in Pennsylvania who's been collecting signed affidavits and witness testimony and as much evidence as he possibly could for a number of years, so it's a very, very well-documented case. And it's sort of like another Roswell in a way, but it hasn't had the sort of cultural overlay and confusion that mm-hmm. seems to go along with the Roswell case.
Now, were there any individuals or entities just the craft itself? I don't think people really saw, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, there didn't even seem to be any seams or any ways in and in or out of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a mysterious aspect of it. But
we're talking with Leslie Kane, and we're talking about her research in the UFO phenomenon. And it's a little more than that. You're actually taking it from a newspaper and television and radio reporter's perspective and trying to bring a full objective report to UFOs, which we discussed is not easy. Because of the humor involved, people start when they start, in politics, if you end up on the Tonight Show or the Letterman Show with jokes every night, well, you probably had it. And that's
right.
What has happened to UFO researchers over the years.
Exactly.
And one thing, talking about UFOs and the Air Force and things like that, it seems to me that there's more reports. There are more reports coming out now than ever before of Air Force jets or Navy jets or some military jets chasing UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
Back there in the early 50s, there were a lot of reports of that. Kind of went away, but now they've had quite a few.
Yeah, you may be thinking of the one July 26th.
Oh, yeah, the one in Maryland or Washington or Virginia.
Exactly. Yeah, and of course that was covered by the Washington Post, where there were some jets that were scrambled after an object that the military then said they couldn't identify because it disappeared.
Yeah, we linked to WTOP radio there that day because they actually put it on the air on the news radio station.
And they were the ones that broke the story.
Mm-hmm.
They were the first people to put that out, and it was from there that it got to the Washington Post. So you're right, it was the local radio station that had initially people just started calling them when they saw what happened. And you have to ask yourself, if how is it that we don't know if they think it's some kind of an unknown helicopter or a private plane or something, how would we not know what was flying around our skies, especially given the fact that it's Washington, D.C. post 911?
Right, and we do UFO reports every week on our show, and there's always some activity near a military base almost every week being spotted.
Mm. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, yes, it is.
And people just, people don't take it seriously, unfortunately.
Now,
the implications of what it means, if indeed these are, you know, we have to all be curious about what these unknown objects are because of the broad implications that the phenomena presents. But the problem is most people deny it even, it's even worthy of consideration.
The thing that always gets me about these reports is that usually they follow, in my opinion, they follow almost a predetermined role. A radio station or somebody out of the loop reports the sighting. There's a lot of people that see it, so you can't really cover it up. Then 3 or 4 days later, it comes out it's space debris, or they call a pilot, well, we never really saw anything. We were chasing, but we never saw anything, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. It always seems to be the same thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. Isn't it frustrating, Jerry?
Yeah, and I want to ask you your opinion, if you don't mind giving it to me about this. My opinion has changed over the years. I'm not so sure that it's a complete cover-up by the military anymore as much as they don't have a clue either.
That's a possibility, too, and I don't really have that much of opinion either, except to just sort of,
the military naturally is going to keep it secret if they can. That's the culture
right.
of that. And
especially since it started during the Cold War.
Yes.
When the secrecy mm-hmm. was of prime concern. There's no question, I don't think, though, that they are withholding information. For whatever the reasons are for the secrecy, whether they know, understand the phenomena or not, we know that they're withholding information. And as far as I'm concerned as a journalist, that's the part that isn't fair, that the people have a right to that information.
Right.
I feel, you know, I represent people in a certain sense because my job is to provide them with information. Well, if I can't get the information to provide to the people, then I can't do my job.
And the frustrating thing to me with the Freedom of Information Act is that the bureaucrats have subverted that law into almost, it's almost useless sometimes now.
You're right. It's just
the
right.
Unintended consequences always shows up if you can get a bureaucrat a veteran of some military service. I mean, a colonel's not going to get promoted to general if he's out here saying, yeah, we got information on UFOs.
Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right, Jerry. I think that the pretty much they can do what they want, and they will do what they want, the powers that be. And all we can do is just keep pushing. I mean, and do the best we can to try to push it up against that.
Well, I've been doing talk shows for many years now, I do sense that there seems to be a little break in the dam, so to speak, on the UFO information. I think that I don't know. I'm not expecting it to be. Released this year. Steve Bassett told me the other day on the air that he thought something might be released this year. I don't think that's likely. But
I don't either. And bless his heart. He's a very positive person, and he says he seems to believe that every year this is going to be the year.
Yeah.
So I have to agree with you. I don't have a lot of hope for this year. But I'm willing to keep fighting for it anyway.
Well, Leslie, we're going to let you go in a little bit, but I want to talk to you about a couple other things about this issue as well, and you're going to have to come back and keep us abreast of what's happening.
That'd
here.
Be wonderful.
In this conference that you took part in Washington, right?
That's yes, where it was. Was that the scientific panel?
The panel. And all of your other activities in Washington gathered around this. Were the reporters as skeptical as ever?
Well, you know, it was interesting. I think that they really, the reporters that were there could not be skeptical because of the way the material was presented. I mean, that it was so credible and so factual, and so there was no kind of hype, there was no speculation, there was nothing stated that couldn't be documented. And so I was very happy. Both, there were two incidences. One was the October 22nd press conference in which John Podesta spoke, which we talked about a bit earlier. I don't think anybody would question John Podesta. And I also presented my perspective on it and presented this paper, which is thoroughly footnoted. People can read that also on the freedomofinfo.org website. They did not seem to present, to have any kind of an attitude, and the articles that came out after that press conference did take the subject seriously. So we were very happy about that. There was some coverage by CNN and Fox, there was television coverage, and all of it was very respectful. So I think we might have made a little progress there. And then when we did the panel, which was a separate event that was on November 8th, which we had a panel of very distinguished PhD scientists and physicists, and we also had a former official from the FAA, a high-level official, John Callahan. These, again, were such credible people who spoke with a scientific perspective. And the media there was just no way they could not take it seriously. We also, and during that panel, there was a discussion of the problem with the ridicule factor. And this element was discussed at such length that I think if any journalist had come away from that and used the ridicule, it just wouldn't work because they heard the message.
Yeah, in other words, there was some inoculation going on, which is
good.
I
think that's true. And there was a piece actually that came out in the Washington Post 2 weeks after about this event in Washington, which was a very, very good article. And the focus of the symposium was to look at the science of interstellar travel and how that relates to the question of UFOs. And we had physicists explaining how it is conceivable that objects could get here from outer space, because a lot of people, you know, they say, well, it can't be possible, they can't be from outer space because nothing can go faster than the speed of light. And they have, so there's a new physics that has a new way of looking at all of that. And the article that came out in the Washington Post was focused around the science of interstellar travel, and it quoted a number of our panelists and took the event 100% seriously. So to get a story in the Washington Post is quite an accomplishment. We're very happy, and so I think we may be making some headway into helping, you know, helping present the issue in such a way that it can be taken seriously.
Right. The Washington Post is not, normally inclined to report UFO stories, but there have been some cracks, as you mentioned, recently.
Mm-hmm, that's absolutely right.
And
I think this may be one of the first stories they've ever done. I know they actually the other story they did in last July, just before the event happened on July 26th that we were talking about earlier,
mm-hmm.
They did a very long story on this. You probably saw the piece, Jerry, the anniversary of the overflights in Washington of 1952.
Yes.
Do you remember the 50th anniversary?
Oh, sure. I remember that when I was very young, and even here in this little town where I grew up in Muskogee, Oklahoma, they had it. It was on the front page.
Amazing.
In 1952. About the UFOs over Washington, D.C.
I bet you wish you'd saved that article.
Yeah, I bet I do, too. It's not available anyplace.
But the Washington Post did a very long piece in July on the 50th anniversary of that event, specifically about that event. So that was also a significant step forward, I think.
Okay, now, Leslie, what's next?
Well, what's next is I'm going to keep pushing on this FOIA Keksberg, and we want to get some information, and we want to find out what landed in Keksberg and why is the government not telling us what it is if they don't tell us.
They took it away, we're pretty sure, on the back of a truck.
Well, a lot of witnesses report seeing that, and these are reliable, these are reporters and firemen and, you know, reliable people, and it's not more than one. So we believe that, given the research that's been done on it, it certainly suggests, you know, I mean, people did see the object, as I described, lying on the ground in the woods. So we, you know, eyewitnesses who gave independent descriptions that were identical, even though they didn't even know each other. So that, I don't think there's any question that that object was there. And so, therefore, we know it had to have been taken away.
Leslie Kane has been our guest, and Leslie, we have some links to your website, and
excellent.
We will stay in touch with you, and I've enjoyed our visit, and I know we've just touched the surface, but you got to start somewhere.
You do, and I'd just like listeners to know that they can go on the website, and we will be updating all the people that are, a lot of people are interested in our FOIA effort, and we will be posting updates regularly on the website as to the progress that we're making, so we hope people will tune in.
Thank you very much, Leslie Kane.
Thank you very much for having me on, Jerry.
It